This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning on this Saturday. Hope everybody's having a good day. And, of course, looking forward to 3 hours of talk here with baseball and NBA and football all on the horizon. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with headlines. Well, the Mariners, what a bad loss last night. Horrible. 14-10, they blew a 4-0 lead, a 10-5 lead. And then the bad part about it, the two guys that they were counting on to really help them out in the bullpen coming off the DL just got blown up. I mean, Nick Vincent came out, gave up 2 runs in a third of an inning. And then Nicasio came out and blew his 4th save, giving up 5 runs in a third of an inning. And so the two guys that they were counting on to at least cover everything in the 6th and 7th inning just didn't get it done. And they came in the 6th and 7th inning, and so all of a sudden you have a bad loss, the losing streak's up to 5 games, and I think there has to be concern. I mean, and it ruined a great day by Nelson Cruz. 7 RBIs, 1 home run, and he did his part. The hitting people did their part, and again, it kind of shows you that this team right now is not very good in high-scoring games. I mean, they got the runs, but they gave up too many. So, of course, that'll continue with the series tonight at 4, going with Boston. So, 5-game losing streak for the Mariners, and of course, get a little bit of a break because the Astros didn't win, but the Astros still with a substantial lead on the Mariners. As far as news, Gene Segura is still missing. That's 2 games he's been out with that infection, and so no word as far as what's going to happen today. As far as other news, looks like we're still waiting for the official word from the National Football League, but Jameis Winston is going to be suspended 3 games for allegedly groping an Uber driver, and now I think you can see that some of the testimony did not come out against him. Now, remember, there was no charge on this, and this happened in his rookie year in 2016. A lot of people down in Tampa calling for him to get cut. That's obviously not going to happen, but it looks like he is going to have to miss 6 games, and it looks like he's agreed to this. It could have been 6 if they ended up doing any worse. More signings for first-round picks. Isaiah Wynn, the New England Patriots' first-round pick, ended up getting his deal done. So we're down to about 19 draft choices that have not signed. Of course, the Seahawks have all of theirs signed when Washeem Green got his deal done just the other day. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this Saturday morning, my
friend?
Doing
well. How about you?
Oh, can't complain. Everything is all alive and well and kicking, sir.
Well, that's good.
You're just talking about some signings in the NFL. What's up with Dez Bryant? Why is it that nobody wants to sign him right now? Are you just waiting to see what happens if somebody gets injured in camp?
Yeah, that's going to – well, again, he – probably in retrospect should have taken the 3-year, $21 million deal from the Baltimore Ravens. They were the first to offer, and it's going to be much, much more than what he's going to have to eventually get at the start of training camp. But at this moment, there's like nothing, very little that they can do. He's just going to have to wait. And I think obviously the baggage that he has with the way that he blows up in the sidelines has affected his marketing value at the moment. But he's got nothing at the moment.
I know, you also look at Eric Reed, Kenny Vaccaro, there's a bunch of nice safeties that's sitting out there. Is that true they tried to form an alliance on how not to stick together and so they wouldn't get lowball?
No, actually what that was, because I was doing radio yesterday, doing network radio, and what happened is that Trey Boston was on Sirius, and Trey Boston, who's also unemployed, basically said that the safety's all going to stick together and not take the minimum and bring the salaries down. But the problem is he turned something down from Arizona that he called to be embarrassing because he said he had a good visit. In fact, what he ended up saying on Sirius was that he went to Indianapolis and the coach and the general manager didn't even come out to see him. I mean, he just was sitting there, and I guess he played some pool or something like that, or ping pong or whatever. And so that turned into a bad visit. They said they brought out the red carpet in Arizona, but he called it an embarrassing offer. Well, the problem is, I mean, he doesn't have a job right now. And
I'm sorry, Mr.
He's going to have to wait.
I mean, if you're unemployed, Mr. Clayton, you got to take that job.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, you got some situations out there right now. You going into camp, the younger bodies are the bodies that they're looking for anyway. But if you're unemployed, you've got to take that job right now.
Oh, agree.
You know, what other scenarios do you have? For a bunch of them right now. And, what is it? This is a safety market was set low by Barnett over there in Green Bay, or is just that's how it went?
Yeah, just the safety market just didn't hit this year. I mean, Morgan Barnett was the only one that really got any kind of a deal, and nobody else really could get any kind of – I was talking to Bradley McDougal about it, and, he took a $4.5 million deal right before free agency, and that turned out to be extremely wise because, in the case of Eric Reed, I do think that the protest on the sidelines, during the national anthem has affected him. But I think what you're looking at is that, when I was going through and checking out, Earl Thomas's trade possibilities, there's like 27 teams that had safeties. Okay. And so I knew that the market was going to be thin. Dallas has elected not to do it because they wanted to go young. And, obviously Arizona is one of the teams, but they're not going to trade him to Arizona because it's a division team. You're not going to give a potential future Hall of Fame player to your division rival. So there was no market except for then Houston. Houston stepped up. And I thought they were going to do something when they lost their free safety, Andre Hall. But now what they're going to do is one of two things. They're going to take Kareem Jackson, their corner, and put him at safety. And they have Cedric Reed as a third-round pick at safety. So there just isn't a good market for free safeties. And you notice, with the exception of Vaccaro, most of these guys are all free safeties.
Yeah. I think today, in this day and age today, you got to be pretty versatile as far as you got to have that ability to cover. You have the ability to play the run. You've got to be very versatile as a safety in the NFL today. I think if you just specialize in one area on the football field as far as the safety is concerned, you might be limited. Unless you're very extraordinary, you might be limited out there as far as your market is concerned. Because you look at what the safeties do today. Some safeties have to play cornerback.
Right.
Yeah, they have to cover tight ends. They have to cover.
And then some safeties have to play linebacker.
There you go. They have to step in and play and get at that linebacker position. If you're not specialized in those areas, I think your market might be limited.
Right.
And especially, Eric Reed is a very peculiar one because he could play linebacker if he needs. Mm-hmm. He could step down in the box and do it. And he could also play the free safety position. I know the protest, but I think he's a real good player that's out there on the market right now.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah.
But he's got nothing going.
I know. It's just surprising. It's just very surprising. But right quick, let's look at the NFC North this week, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
You got Green Bay, Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit in the division. Right now, you got Minnesota as the top dog in that division. You know what? I would say to you this, Mr. Clayton. I think Green Bay will win that division this year.
I think there's a chance. I would agree. Now, if Kirk Cousins goes in and lights it up, then that's going to be it. But I know when you start to go through the hierarchy of the NFC, you always tend to forget Green Bay, and I think that's a big mistake because while Minnesota is sitting there pretty with a great defense and now two good receivers, a good running game, all those things, don't count out the Green Bay Packers. Because when you start to think about, who are the teams right now? And you say, okay, you got the Rams, you got the Eagles, you've got Minnesota. Well, everybody seems to forget about Green Bay.
Yeah, because if you look at Green Bay, them getting Jimmy Graham in their offense, I think he'll definitely have a good time over there with Aaron Rodgers. Also, they got Muhammad on the defensive side of the ball. I thought their draft was pretty admirable this year as far as what they picked up in the draft. And, and that's a rarity for Green Bay to be active in the free agency market.
Well, it's a change now, and that's one of the things that Mike McCarthy wanted, and Ted Thompson's now kind of been on emeritus status, and so Ted was never big on free agency, never.
No.
And so he always wanted to grow his own.
And I like the change at the defensive coordinator position. I think Pence is going to be a real good defensive coordinator for what Mike McCarthy is going to want out of his defense. And Aaron Rodgers, need I say more?
Right.
Aaron Rodgers compared to Kirk Cousins, when you look at that quarterback position, you're going to go with Aaron Rodgers all day, every day. If their offensive line, which I think Brian Bulaga, they're asking him to take a reduction in his contract at one time?
Not really. No, I think that there was a thought that maybe they might, but I don't think they actually went ahead and did it.
Oh, okay. But the offensive line might be a little concerned because every year they have that propensity of having injuries on the O-line. But if the O-line could stand up and come to fruition for them, they could be pretty good. Now, the running game, they have to get a running game for Aaron Rodgers. I like Ty Montgomery, but I think Ty Montgomery is a guy that you can't go out there and expect him to get 15, 20 touches at the running back position. That is just virtually impossible. He's not built like that. Now, if they can repair that running game and get it going with Aaron Rodgers, I could see Green Bay taking them over. I could really see Green Bay taking Minnesota over in that division.
Yeah, I could see that too, because I think they will be a little bit better on defense. I still don't know if they have enough of a pass rush. I think that's going to be a big concern. And then staying at the division, it's like I still think Chicago's a long way away. I don't see them.
Definitely.
I think, you know, they're closer to the top of the draft than they are to the playoffs. And Detroit, I just think they're kind of caught in the middle. They're kind of like, you know, Miami and Baltimore of late, where they're just kind of an 8 or 9 win team. And I don't know if they can get enough to get over the top.
I don't, you know, Detroit is for the, and you bring up a good point about that. And, you know, they're coming in with Matt Patricia as the new head coach and all that. And that remains to see what he can do as a head coach. It's something about Detroit with Matthew Stafford. Do you feel they actually got it together as far as getting an offensive, a complete offense around him and making it function?
Well, it's same thing as Green Bay. They don't do the running game. They just did not have a running game. And it seemed like the way that they were coached up is that they really almost had disdain for running the football. I mean, they made body moves and things like that, but they never really committed to the run. Now they've got to do something.
Yeah, you brought up Chicago. They're coming in with a young quarterback. They brought in Robinson and a couple of good receivers over there. But I still think the Bears are going to be a step behind. You said, they're closer to the draft than they are closer to winning that division. Now, I like them bringing Vic Fangio back as the defensive coordinator.
That was good. Yeah, they were 10th on defense last year.
Yeah, you know the one person I think that underperformed on that defense is Floyd, the kid out of Georgia that they drafted a couple of years ago.
Right.
And, you know, I would like to see more production out of him as a pass rusher. Akeem Hicks has turned into a real good interior lineman, too.
Right.
On that team. Yeah, I like their linebackers. But it's just on the offensive side, can this young quarterback take him over the top? I don't know if he can do it right now.
No. Hey, JB, I've got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday, my friend.
All right,
friend.
Sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, so the Jameis Winston story, and I also want to get your reaction on the Mariners, that loss last night, this road trip, and what it really means in the big picture. So give us a call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, so Jameis Winston looks like he's going to get suspended for 3 games. And, you know, comes at a horrible time for him because, you know, next year he's got the big 50-year option, you know, about $20 million that's going to be tied up with him. And now you wonder, it's like they open the season against New Orleans on the road, and then they have home games against Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And so even though Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of the better backups in the league, that gives them the possibility of maybe getting off to an 0-3 start and ruining their season. And, you know, that's where they need a Jameis Winston. And so now with all the incidents that he's had, you know, a lot of people are wondering what is his future and what is his present with Tampa Bay. I think they're going to stand by him. I know that the players like him for leadership and everything else. I know that he's got all the talent you want in a quarterback, but these off the field things. Now, again, it's not like he's had something in the last couple years. I mean, the one that was kind of crazy was, you know, he made kind of a sexist type of remark. I'm not talking about the remark that was just lewd when he was at a cafeteria and kind of shouted out something, but, you know, kind of minimized women as far as that goes. And so, yeah, there's some issues with him, but I still think that they'll stand by him. I don't know if any Tampa Bay Buck fans out there, give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN to see what you think. Because the one thing, you know, in the NFC, as good as the quarterbacking position is, you can't afford to take any kind of a drop back at quarterback because, you know, I know I go through the QBR numbers and I'm trying to come up with some formula for expected wins and, you know, wins against replacement and that. And really, when you look at Winston, he's pretty much at that 8 or 9 win level. And so, you know, he's good enough to do some good things. But if you, you know, now don't have him and Ryan Fitzpatrick, you have a drop off in the points scored, that's bad. Can't have that. So, you know, reaction to Jameis Winston. I know one of the things I was talking about and wrote about this week, and going to get your reaction to that at 866-979-ESPN. I mean, they've got two players that are entering the possibility of getting third contracts. Earl Thomas, who's going to be a holdout, and K.J. Wright, who's there and one of the leaders on the team. If you are picking between one or two of them, which one do you give the contract extension? Now, Earl obviously is the better player. He's a six-time Pro Bowler, you know, Hall of Fame consideration, maybe down the line. KJ is one of the best coverage linebackers and a very good linebacker, Pro Bowl caliber guy. But what do you do as far as, you know, because when you get to the third contracts, as you've seen with Michael Bennett, you've seen it now with Cam Chancellor, they could be problematic. You may not be able to get the full third contract and time served and all that stuff. Now, again, they elected to trade Michael Bennett. It was misfortune happened when they got the Cam Chancellor injury. But what's your thoughts? I mean, if it's a choice between Cam or K, if it's a choice between Earl and KJ, which one would you do? Particularly now that what complicates things is the Earl Thomas holdout, because with him holding out, now you don't know if he's totally in on everything or not. So get your reaction to that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Back to the Mariners for a second. You know, everything still looks good as far as them making the playoffs, because where their key is the schedule. And that's where you look at things and you say, okay, they certainly blew the game last night. They lost tough games in New York. And so now they're on a five-game losing streak against Boston and the Yankees. Still, you look at the numbers and they only have five games remaining again out of the division against teams with winning records, and six games against National League teams, although Colorado's now at 500, so that may creep up a little bit more. But overall, you look at their record against winning teams, 19-17, and they're 27-13 against losing teams. And so with the 40, there's 86 games remaining, 46 are against teams with winning records and 40. So you would have to figure that there's a good chance that 47, they're going to probably they're going to win 60% of their games, 66% of their games. So they're probably going to go in those against losing teams. There's a decent chance that they would go 24-16. Well, no, 24, 16. Yeah, but whatever it is, they've got enough that can still get to 90 wins. But then here's where the reality sets in. And the reality sets in that, you know, they're either going to face Boston, because they're not going to catch the Astros. Astros are going to win over 100 games. You know, they're going to face Boston or the New York Yankees, and it's going to be there. And you can see they have not been able to win in their venues. And so this could be the great thing of making the playoffs finally after 17 years, but everything ends after one game. What they have to do now over the course of the next 86 games is resolve things to make sure that they can win that one game, and so they can advance and maybe try to get into deeper into the playoffs. That's not going to be easy, because, you know, both the Yankees and Boston, they're not going to catch the Yankees in Boston. Both they're going to win over 100 games. And so the reality is this could be just a one-game enjoyment for the fans, but then the reality will set in after the season, because with so many one-win games, you'll see a drop back in the record next year. You know, they're 23-11 in one-run games, and when you're that pronounced, the theory goes that you drop back the next year as far as win total. And I think that's just a reality, because, you know, you can see what this team has done, and they've done a great job of doing it, is that they win most of the close games. 27-13 against the is a record against losing teams, and they play close games against losing teams. But now you can see they're having a tougher time against the winning teams, tougher time against teams like the Astros and the Red Sox. I mean, that was a great homestand where they were able to get the split in the four-game set. Now, of course, you know, they'll have the Yankees coming back, and they'll play them in September. That'll be here in Seattle. But it's a weird schedule that's helped them out, and it's a great break. I mean, it's a break right now that you only have six teams with winning records in the American League. And so to try to plow through that schedule and survive, they've done that. and they've done a good job still against the winning teams. I mean, that three games, I think one of the keys to the season was a three-game sweep of the Angels and the fact that they have a 4-2 record against the Angels, a 6-3 record against the Oakland A's, and that gives them you know, some prominence. But now I think you can see that you know, what is reality is, okay, they're going to make the playoffs in part thanks to the schedule. In fact, you know, some of the great coaching I think has been done by Scott Servais and great GMing that's been done by Jerry DePoto. But they can also just have just one-game playoffs. Is that something you feel comfortable about? Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. What we'll do now is we're going to come back. We're going to talk some San Francisco 49er football. Matt Maiocca joining us. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Please be joined by Matt Maiocca, who, of course, covers the 49ers and is down there doing all the good stuff that's there for NBC Sports and the Bay Area. And so, Matt, Laken Tomlinson, 6 years, 3 years, $18 million bucks. Really?
Yeah. You know, he was obviously a first-round draft pick of the Detroit Lions. 49ers traded for him. Last year when the 49ers were getting ready to enter the season, Kyle Shanahan did not think that they had a starting caliber offensive guard on their team. So they made the trade for an underachieving Laken Tomlinson that Detroit had pretty much moved on from. And he stepped in, did not start week one after about 3 days of practice, but he did start week two and started the remainder of the season. You know, he wasn't great, but he also wasn't awful. And I think the 49ers felt like he had a lot of room to improve once he got familiar with the system, had an entire off season of learning and kind of understanding the required movements of Kyle Shanahan's guards. And so they signed him to the extension. They had the fifth year option on him. They decided not to pick that up because it was going to be $9.5 million. So what they did was they declined that option. That's for the 2019 season, but made it very clear to him that they wanted him around. And so it looks like the left guard position is set, and basically the only starting position up for grabs is the right guard position.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, I'm kind of curious about that because say what you want about what they're doing. They've probably been the most active team as far as getting contract extensions. I mean, you know, obviously, well, they got the one for Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, Gary Gilliam, of course, got a two-year deal. Cassius Marsh, 2 years. Marquise Goodwin.
Marquise Goodwin. I think that's part of their long-term planning is that they have so much cap space that, you know, they can look ahead a couple years and see, you know, they can identify the players, the people, I should say, not necessarily just the players, but the person behind the player that they want to keep and then make that happen. Probably, you know, you mentioned Garoppolo. He signed a big money deal at the time, making him the highest paid player in the league. And I think, you know, a year from now, we might be saying the same thing about DeForest Buckner. You know, after next season, that's the first time the 49ers can start talking to him about an extension beyond that four-year deal that he signed as a draft pick. He's someone they want to keep around. And, you know, he might not have the name recognition at this point around the league. He might not be considered around the league as one of the top young defensive players in the game, but that's how the 49ers view him. And, you know, he has everything they want from a talent standpoint, from a work ethic standpoint, from just the kind of guy you want on your team. So with all that cap space, you know, they're looking ahead to the future. And I think that they envision a very lucrative contract for DeForest Buckner in the future, making him kind of the Jimmy Garoppolo of that defense.
Now, of course, now you get the four guys that have, are starters who got contract extensions. You know, Richard Sherman, presumably we'll see how he does with coming off the Achilles tendon. I mean, he can be locked up for 3 years. Weston Richburg's locked up for 5 years at center. Jerick McKinnon, 4 years at running back. And so how many open spots do they have for starting jobs? Because now you figure that, you know, those seven jobs are either new additions or contract extensions. How many spots are locked up?
I think 21 out of the 22 spots are locked up. I think the only spot that is not locked up on that on the entire, you know, offensive or defensive units is right guard. And they have, you know, three guys who will be competing for that. Joshua Garnett, who was a first-round pick a couple years ago. He didn't play last season. Due to a knee injury that wasn't a season-long injury, but he just wasn't ready. You know, he wasn't the kind of player who I think the 49ers felt like could make any kind of impact in this system for what the 49ers asked their guards to do. So they put him on the IR before the final cuts, and they said, you need to remake your body. You need to you need to work your butt off to reposition your weight, get stronger, get more agile, all those things. So he's going to be in the competition. Jonathan Cooper, the former first-round pick of the Cardinals, who's bounced around a little bit. 49ers felt like he kind of resurrected his career last season with the Cowboys. They like what they saw on film, so they gave him a one-year contract to compete for a job. And Mike Person came in. He's probably a better fit as a backup because he can play the guard positions and he can also play center. And for one of your backup offensive linemen on game days, you need somebody to do that. So really, I think every position is set except for right guard. You know, they do have some, you know, there'll be some competition for playing time. But, you know, as I look at it, a wide receiver, the 49ers did select Dante Pettis in the second round of that draft, but I think Pierre Garçon is pretty well set as a starter. Marquise Goodwin is set as a starter. Trent Taylor gives the 49ers what they want from the slot position. Now this is it's quite a bit different than a year ago, where you know it was tough to find 53 guys on their 90-man roster at this point who you felt were worthy of being NFL players. Now I think this year there might be some pretty good players who are cut as the 49ers try to figure out, you know, not only who their 53-man are to start the season, but the 46 guys who will suit up on game days.
No, that's kind of fascinating. Now, I know one of the stories at the mini camp conclusion was that, and you apparently watched it, everybody did, that Jimmy Garoppolo didn't do all that well, and Kyle Shanahan was kind of, you know, saying good things about the defense and not good things about the offense. Take us through what you saw and what Kyle might be upset about.
You know, I don't know that Kyle's upset. You know, as a head coach, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the give and take. You know, you're happy with one side of the ball. You might not be happy with the other side of the ball. Now, I just thought the offense wasn't sharp. You know, there was one day out there that, you know, they had some pre-snap stuff working on their cadence. So everybody wasn't on the same page. The last day of camp, Garoppolo, you know, airmailed a few, looked like he was a little bit high with his fastball at times. From the 49ers coaching standpoint, yeah, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for guys to, you know, for a side of the ball to struggle when you feel like there are no issues as far as, you know, the players. Yeah, I think that it gives them time to kind of figure stuff out and work through some stuff. I think with mini camp and I think early in training camp, you know, you're trying to put your offense in some difficult situations. You know, maybe mismatch a play call with, you know, the perfect defense just so you can kind of work the worst case scenarios out at this time of year And then, of course, obviously, once you start game planning for teams, the coaching staff trying to put them in the best positions to make plays. So, no, I don't think anyone's pushing the panic button, but what I saw during the mandatory mini camp was that the defense was significantly further along than the offense.
And how about Garoppolo? How does he look as a quarterback? Because obviously he was such a great finish with five wins.
Yeah, he does look good. He did miss more passes than I saw him miss probably at any point last season. But, you know, where he really excels is he's got an exceptionally quick release. You know, I do think that his intermediate and long ball needs a little bit of work. But I think what makes him so good for Kyle Shanahan's system is that Shanahan is a master at figuring out the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities of a defense, and then attacking it. And, you know, the 49ers offensive line, I think, will be improved. I don't think it's going to be, you know, one of the better offensive lines in the league. But what they're able to do with this offense is get guys open quickly and get the ball out of Garoppolo's hands. So Garoppolo has that ability to, you know, get rid of the ball using a variety of arm angles. You know, when a pass rusher is right in his face, he can use a lot of different arm slots to get the ball out quickly. And then typically when these guys make the catch, you know, a guy like Trent Taylor in the slot or the tight ends like George Kittle and Garrett Celek, when they make these catches, say, you know, 5 to 7 yards from the line of scrimmage, there's typically some room to run. So I think that's where this offense is going to excel. And then when you have a guy, like you mentioned earlier, Jerick McKinnon, that a lot of people don't know about, but Shanahan identified him as a perfect fit as a running back for their system, so much so that they really made no attempt to re-sign Carlos Hyde. McKinnon was their number one option, and they got him. Some would say they overpaid, but if your head coach, who's also your offensive coordinator, sees the traits that he likes in a running back and wants that guy, you go get him. And that's exactly what John Lynch did. He has a chance to have a really good season, both as a pass catcher and as a runner in the 49ers zone scheme. So I don't think that there's any real reason to be concerned with the 49ers at this point. I still think that offense is far better than it was, even, you know, talent-wise, as they ended the season a year ago.
What who would McKinnon remind you of? I mean, because you talk about a guy that really doesn't have much recognition except for Kyle Shanahan and the contract that he was able to get.
I don't know who he reminds me of, because he is unique. He's got the speed. He's got the quickness. You know, he catches the ball out of the backfield very well. And he's small. You know, what is he, like 5'8", 5'9", you know, 205. But he might be the strongest guy on the team. You know, if you recall back 4 years at the combine, I mean, he pumped out like 32 reps of 225 on the bench press. So he's never really been an every down back. That's not what they brought him for at the Minnesota Vikings. He was never really that with the Vikings, but that's how Kyle Shanahan envisions him. You know, he sees him as not only a third down back, but somebody who can really excel on first downs and second downs too, and who's strong enough to step up, pick up a blitz, and do all the other things required of a running back. So, you know, he's got big playability. He can make plays in space. That's what the 49ers felt like they were lacking with Carlos Hyde, that, you know, Carlos is more of a bruiser. You know, if he caught a ball in space and a defensive back was coming up, a safety was coming up, Carlos would just lower his shoulder and plow forward for 4 or 5 more yards. With McKinnon, you know, he has that elusiveness where instead of 4 or 5 more yards, he can get you 40 or 50 more yards. So, I think if he stays healthy, he has a chance to really be one of the game's explosive elite backs.
Interesting. How good are they at wide receiver?
Well, I think I don't know that they have anyone that would absolutely scare a defense. Maybe Marquise Goodwin, just because of his speed. What I think they have there is a lot of balance. You know, they don't have somebody where, you know, when they put together a game plan, hey, we got to get the ball in this guy's hands, you know, 12 times. You know, we have to have this many X number of plays designed to get him the ball. So, you know, I don't think they have anybody like that. They can really kind of, you know, have a different number one receiver pretty much every game, depending on the game plan and the opponent and what the opponent chooses to do. So they have, you know, we know Pierre Garçon, who's now on the other side of 30, but I think is a pretty good fit for what Garoppolo does. You know, he can kind of box out and use his body and make catches in traffic. Marquise Goodwin had his breakout season, a speedster who, you know, basically ran two routes in his four seasons with Buffalo, using much more of the route tree, much more variety in what they ask him to do. You have Trent Taylor, who's a slot receiver, kind of that prototypical slot receiver who can use his short area quickness to get open quickly. Then you add to that Dante Pettis, that the 49ers believe can play all three of those spots and could be, you know, in essence, the first guy off the sideline. Then you have some other guy, you know, Kendrick Bourne is somebody from Eastern Washington who made the team as an undrafted rookie, and he really had a nice offseason program. So I think their wide receiver group, although lacking in star power, I think has enough balance and enough variety as far as different guys filling different roles that I don't think that'll be an issue. I know everybody would like to say, oh, they need a Dez Bryant, they need this, they need that. But I don't get the sense that the 49ers are concerned at all about their wide receiving core, because they also consider their two tight ends, George Kittle and Garrett Celek and Jerick McKinnon, all part of that equation as well.
Hmm. Interesting. And how much do you like the way that Kyle Shanahan's coaching this team?
I really like it. I mean, it's I think that he has a very good touch. I never covered him as an offensive coordinator. I only heard stories. He is an exceptionally smart guy, and I can definitely see where he rubs some people the wrong way as an offensive coordinator, because, you know, he had, I'm sure, his ideas of, you know, what the other side of the ball should be doing too. So the one thing that he was able to do and just wowed guys in the offensive meeting rooms and even the defensive meeting rooms is that he was able to tell the offensive players, you know, here's the defense you're going against, and he can identify what each of those defensive players, what their assignments are, and he's, you know, then telling the defense, you know, when you're looking at the other team's offense, you know, this is what they're trying to accomplish. The reason they did this is to identify this matchup. He takes it to such a different level that, you know, initially the 49er veteran players are like, wow, we've never heard this level of detail and this level of explanation of not only this is the play call, but this is why this is the play call, and this is why this specific play is designed to beat this specific defense. I've found him refreshing. You know, he's not the paranoid coach who believes that any question about football is asking to divulge state secrets. He's been great to deal with, and the players have really, really responded to him. And I think now, you know, one full year into this, more than a full year into this, I think he's gotten the kinds of guys in that locker room that he wants. So I think this process has probably been expedited by a year and a half or so over what the plan was when John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan came aboard. And I think so much of that was made possible by the New England Patriots gifting Jimmy Garoppolo to them last year.
And then finally, what's it look like for Richard Sherman?
We'll see. I mean, he's incredibly intelligent guy. I mean, I would almost go so far as to say if he never plays a snap for the 49ers, he's been worth the money because of the influence in the locker room, the influence on the practice field. I mean, the very first practice I saw this offseason, I don't know that there was another person on the field, coaches included, who were as into it as Richard Sherman, and immediately grabbing young players, young defensive backs as they're coming off the field and breaking down plays and telling them ways they can get better. I saw him move a lot, late in the offseason program. He looks to be doing pretty well. I don't know that he'll be cleared the very first day of training camp. I would think that the 49ers would bring him along slowly, work him in slowly, have him practice a day, off a day, that kind of thing, because there's really no urgency to get him out there. He knows what he's doing. But if he's anywhere near the player he was with Seattle, I think that he can make a very positive impact, not only just for this year, but probably long after he's gone, just by passing that torch to some of the younger players and the younger players having the benefit of seeing the game of football through the eyes of Richard Sherman.
Yeah, I know I miss him in the locker room because he's one of the best guys I've ever dealt with, and I know how smart he is as a player. He is sensational. Hey, Matt Maiocco, thank you so much. Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area, 49er offseason update, and we'll be talking soon.
Sounds good, John. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay. Matt Maiocco, and of course, we'll come back. Take your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Robin. Robin, how are you?
I am great, John. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you.
Love your show, and I'm so happy that you're on afternoons with the Three Musketeers on my way home from work, because I soak in all of what you say. So I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is personal. How do you remember all the stats that you have? Do you have somewhat of a photographic memory, or is it just that you just practice or whatever? Second question, I'll take them offline. Second question is, I wondered if you got to watch the game that Paxton pitched, his last one in New York, and it seemed to me, I was watching it on a computer, it looked to me like he was in the, the edges of the strike zone and have seen those given as strikes before. I know the umpire's the guy that has the ultimate, decisions on the field, and it's too late, but, I just wondered if you watched it and what you thought.
I didn't watch it, unfortunately, but on the question about the stats and all that stuff, I study it all the time because what I try to do, like each day, I'll devote, more than an hour and a half, but I'll have an opportunity where I have like an hour or two to study different projects in that. And so, I'll give you an example. It's like I'm going through one right now where just trying to study, what the meaning of a running game is and how much of an impact that is. This somewhat relates to the Seahawks, but like, for example, what I did is I went through a four-year period and then start to say, okay, so here's Jacksonville. They get Leonard Fournette. They add like 400 yards of rushing, but the most important thing, they go from like a negative as far as the point differential to like 100. They gained almost 200 points. 200 scoring points. And so, and you go through and you say, oh, I think I picked up that trend. I mean, you saw it when Ezekiel Elliott went to Dallas, when Todd Gurley got the running game going for the Rams. And so, consequently, if Seattle can get something out of both Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, they'll be, which they are, is like in their run, their point differential is like 17 and 34 points the last couple of years, then it could get back into 100, and that can get them maybe to the 10, 11 game level, which I still think it might be a reach, but I study it all the time, and so I guess that's fresh. I'm always studying the salary cap. I'm always working on a database. Back to Paxton for a second. Danny O'Neill brought this up this week, and there may be some validity to it. Not that he's got something that's totally bad wrong, but I think maybe he had a cramp in his hand, and maybe he's just adjusting a little bit, particularly in the first inning, a little bit off. I mean, he gets it going and gets it fixed up, but it's kind of, I think, a little bit of an adjustment that he's going through right now. But I guess the big thing is, you know, the number that is still impressive, he's still getting 96 and 97 on the fastball. And so if there is something that's a little bit wrong, it's not big time wrong. And I know that Shannon Dreher brought this up yesterday, is that I think he threw like about seven or eight, you know, real twisting type of pitches involving his hand, more than that in his last start. And, you know, he did reasonably well with that. So I think that he's healthy, but I think he's just a little bit off right now.
Thank you.
Hey, Robin, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.